Page 86. We think that anyone who seriously studies the modern literature of planning must come to the conclusion that, whatever his objections to the social consequences of planning, these arguments against its economic efficiency no longer hold. All technical means for efficient planning, including the expansion of production in accordance with consumer wants and the most advanced technical possibilities, and taking into account the cost in public health, personal risks, unemployment, never adequately calculated in the cost sheet of private enterprise. All these technical means are available today. Another counter-argument holds that as soon as state capitalism turns from concentrating upon armaments to a genuine peace economy, its only alternative, if it wants to avoid unemployment, is to spend a very substantial part of the national income for the construction of modern pyramids or to raise considerably the standard of living. No economic causes exist which could prevent a state capitalistic government from doing so. The obstacles are of a political nature and will be dealt with later. A third argument points in the opposite direction. It objects that state capitalism necessarily leads to a standstill in techniques or even a regress. Investments would slow down and technical progress ceases if the market laws are put out of operation. As long as competitive armaments continues, the contrary will probably be true. Besides the profit motive, the vital interests of the controlling group will stimulate both investment and technical progress. In the effort to maintain and extend its power, the controlling group will come into conflict with foreign interests, and its success will depend upon its military force. This, however, will be a function of the technical efficiency. Any slackening in the speed of technical progress might lead to military inferiority and to destruction. Footnote 27. Text. Only after all possible enemies will have disappeared because the whole world will be controlled by one totalitarian state will the problem of technological progress and capital expansion come to the fore. Are there, one may ask, no economic limitations at all to the existence and expansion of state capitalism? With its rise, will a utopia emerge in which all economic wants can easily be fulfilled if political factors don't interfere? Did not the liberal theory also believe it had proved that the market system will guarantee its constituents the full use of all resources if not interfered with? And did it not become apparent later that inherent forces prevent the market system from functioning and ushered in growing interference by private monopolies and the government? Forewarned as we are unable to discover any inherent economic forces, economic laws of the old or new type which could prevent the functioning of state capitalism. Footnote 28. Text. Page 87. Government control of production and distribution furnishes the means for eliminating the economic causes of depressions, culminative destructive processes, and unemployment of capital and labor. We may even say that under state capitalism, economics as a social science has lost its object. Economic problems in the old sense no longer exist when the coordination of all economic activities is affected by conscious plan instead of by the natural laws of the market. where the economist formally racked his brain to solve the puzzle of the exchange process, he meets understate capitalism with mere problems of administration. There are indeed limitations to state capitalism, but they derive from natural conditions as well as from the very structure of the society which state capitalism seeks to perpetuate. Natural and other non-economic limitations. Footnote 29, text. 1. To be fully workable, state capitalism needs an adequate supply of raw material, plant and labor of all kinds, technicians, administrators, skilled and unskilled labor. Characteristic for a highly industrialized country. Without a plentiful supply of raw materials and the outfit in machinery and skill of a modern industrial society, great waste must accompany state capitalistic intervention, possibly greater than under a market economy. For the first limitation, inadequate supply of raw materials. A typical example is offered by Nazi Germany. The enormous machinery which had to be built to compensate for the insufficiency of the raw material basis, too small to cope with the armament program, and the difficulties for the producer to obtain raw materials and, in consequence, new machinery. Footnote 30, text. Cannot be attributed to the system itself, but to the fact that one of its main prerequisites was lacking from the very beginning. On the other hand, many of the Soviet Russian economic failures may be traced back to the lack of both raw materials and adequate development of the productive forces, lack of trained technicians, skilled workers, and of the qualities known as work discipline, all of which are plentiful in highly industrialized countries only, go a long way in explaining the slow progress of rearming, reorganizing the transportation system, and raising or even maintaining the standard of living in Soviet Russia. But even here, our government-controlled economic system has shown the power to survive under conditions where a system of free enterprise would have collapsed completely. Government-controlled foreign trade and the development of an industry for ersatz material may overcome the limitations of a too narrow basis of raw materials. Page 88. Filling the gap between a fully industrialized and chiefly agricultural economy is a much more painful and drawn-out process. 2. Differences in vital interests will crop up in the group or groups controlling the state. They can stem from different positions within the administration, different programs for maintaining or expanding power, or the struggle for the monopoly of control. Unless adequate provisions are made for overcoming these differences, bad compromises and continuous struggle will arise. Conflicting interests within the ruling class may thwart the construction of a general plan embodying the optimum of all available resources for achieving consistent chosen ends. The choice of the ends itself represents a major problem as long as no common will has been established. In our discussion, we started always from the assumption given a general plan. This means a plan for certain ends which must be chosen from among a variety of possible ones. Once the minimum requirements for consumption, replacement, and expansion are fulfilled, the planners have a great deal of leeway. If their decisions do not converge into a consistent program, no general plan for the optimum use and development of the given productive forces can be drafted. 4. Conflicting interests, however, do not operate in the ruling group only. Since totalitarian state capitalism is the expression of an antagonistic society at its worst, the will to dominate from above and the counterpressure from below cut deeply into the pseudo-liberty of the state capitalist planners. The planning board, while vested with all the technical means for directing the whole economic process, is itself an area of struggle among social forces far beyond its control. It will be seen that planning in an antagonistic society is only in a technical sense the same tool as that used by a society in which harmony of interests has been established. Political considerations interfere at every step with the construction and execution of an optimum plan. The following paragraphs will offer some examples. How will expansion of production and technical progress be motivated after fear of aggression or objects for new conquests have vanished? Will not under such conditions the dreaded technological standstill make its appearance, thus spoiling all chances of reducing the drudgery of labor while raising the standard of living? Footnote 31, text. A case could be made out of the view that a new set of motivations will arise under totalitarian state capitalism, which will combine the drive for power over men with the will to power over nature and counteract the development toward a static economy. But this is such a distant perspective that we may leave the question open, the more so since under totalitarian capitalism there are serious reasons to keep the productive forces static. Page 89. Under a state capitalistic setup, will the general standard of living rise beyond narrow limits if the expansion program permits? This question can be answered in the affirmative for the democratic form of state capitalism only. For its authoritarian counterpart, however, the problem is different. The ruling minority in a totalitarian state maintains its power not only by terror and atomization, but by its control of the means of production and by keeping the dominated majority in complete spiritual dependence. The masses have no chance of questioning the durability and justification of the existing order. The virtues of war are developed in all effeminacy, all longing for individual happiness is rooted out. A rise in the standard of living might dangerously counteract such a policy. It would imply more leisure time, more professional skill, more opportunity for critical thinking, out of which a revolutionary spirit might develop. It is a widely spread error that the most dangerous revolutions are instigated by the most miserable strata of society. The revolutionary craving for liberty and justice found its most fertile breeding ground not among the paupers but among individuals and groups who were themselves in a relatively better position. The ruling group in totalitarian state capitalism might therefore decide that from the point of view of its own security, a low general standard of living and long trudging working hours are desirable. An armament race and the excitement over threat of foreign aggression seem to be appropriate means for keeping a standard of living low and the war virtues high while maintaining full employment and promoting technical progress. Such a constellation, however, would furnish a striking example for a political limitation of productivity. The highly speculative question might be permitted. What would happen if totalitarian state capitalism were embodied in a unified world state in which the threat of aggression had disappeared for good? Even public works of undreamed scope could not prevent the general standard of living from rising under conditions of full employment. In such a case, the most clever devices of ideological mass domination and the grimmest terror are unlikely to uphold for a long period of minority dictatorship, which can no longer claim itself to be necessary to maintain production and to protect the people from foreign aggression. If our assumption is correct that totalitarian state capitalism will not tolerate a high standard of living for the masses and cannot survive mass unemployment, in a consequence seems to be that it cannot endure in a peace economy. Page 90. As long as one national state capitalism has not conquered the whole earth, however, there will be always ample opportunities to spend most of the productive excesses, capacity, excess over the requirements for a minimum standard.